First Five Santa Clara County, supporting the healthy development of children prenatal through age 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Welcome to Ask the Experts. This podcast is brought to you by First Five Santa Clara County, bringing you important information directly from the experts who provide support to the healthy development of children and families. Sensory processing disorder is a condition that exists when sensory signals don't get organized into appropriate responses. A person with SPD finds it difficult to process and act upon information received through the senses, which creates challenges in performing countless everyday tasks. Motor clumsiness, behavioral problems, anxiety, depression, and other impacts may result if the disorder is not treated effectively. 1 in 6 children experience sensory challenges sufficient to disrupt their academic, social, and/or emotional development, yet information and help for those with this disorder is still very limited.
When I was teaching, I remember talking to parents about children who seemed meek and fragile, and they didn't like to go outside. And this was a preschool where everybody went outside. Even in the cold winter, we always went outside. And these were kids who didn't want to do that, didn't want to interact with other children. And so we would say to parents, what this child needs is more of what he's not enjoying so much. We don't want to torture the child, but we want to encourage him to come to the table, so to speak.
Carol Kranowitz observed many young children with sensory processing disorder during her 25-year career as a music and movement teacher in Washington, D.C. Today, she is an international speaker and author who teaches parents, educators, therapists, and other professionals how sensory issues play out and suggests activities for addressing them at home and school. She is a noted author of The Out of Sync Child, The Out of Sync Child Has Fun, and a children's book, The Good Enoughs Get in Sync. She has become a leading advocate in helping families, teachers, and professionals understand the intricacies of SPD in young children. In this episode, Carol introduces us to the symptoms, diagnosis, impact, and treatment of sensory processing disorder.
Sensory processing disorder happens when the central nervous system of a person has difficulty interpreting sensations that come through the person's body and the environment. Usually we process our sensations automatically. We don't even think about it. We touch something hot and we pull our hand back, or our foot stumbles on an uneven tread on the stairs and we make the physical adjustment to raise our foot so we're not going to bump the step again. The noise is too loud and we might turn away from it or even cover our ears. So we are always taking in sensations from the environment around us, from our own body, and these sensations come to our central nervous system, which tells us how to behave in order to survive and then to learn. So when there's a sensory processing disorder, there's some glitch. It's like a traffic jam in the brain.
What are the known causes of SPD?
There are two reasons that a person might have sensory processing disorder. One is that it's a genetic inherited problem. And so many people who have tactile over-responsivity, they're over-responsive to touch sensations. They often will have a child who looks just like them. Now, SPD can occur when it is not a genetic problem, and that might be because of environmental issues that can also affect the neurological development of an infant. The environment really matters, and that what the way we treat our infants is very important, and what we want to do is give them good enough environments. You know, the baby cries, you go to the baby, you pick her up, you change her diaper, you feed her, you cuddle her. That kind of thing is what babies expect.
So when these senses are not integrated, or like you say, there is a traffic jam in the nervous system, what are the early signs that a child may have SPD?
For a young child, behavior can tell us so much, because the child can't say, I'm not balancing well, or I can't tell the difference between hot and cold. Little kids can't tell us. So we have to look at their behavior, and behavior means something. So, for example, let's say there's a child who refuses to get on the playground swing, and mom is there and thinks, oh, this is so much fun, and my little boy's going to really love this swing. And she picks him up and plops him on the swing, and he howls and cries, slithers off the swing. His behavior is saying, this is not fun. So, of course, we want to lead them to new activities and have them try things we don't like. But if you keep trying, you might. What we don't want to do is overlook the behavior that tells us that there might be something going on with the child's central nervous system that is not able to integrate or take in sensations and make use of them. So in that little scene where the child doesn't want to be on the playground swing, the child might be indicating that he has problems with his vestibular system. The vestibular system is one of our sensory systems that gives us a sense of balance and a sense of where we are in space. And every time we move our head, we are activating our vestibular system. Another kind of behavior would be a child who does not feel comfortable being touched by other people. We've got to touch other people. We have to feel comfortable being touched by them. And a child who shrinks away from touch or even cries out from touch, that's a big red flag. That behavior is saying this child has difficulty with his tactile system. His central nervous system can't figure out what is a benign touch and what is a hostile touch. Everything seems hostile. In a baby, we would see from the baby's withdrawal from mother's loving touch a possible tactile problem. Even newborns, day-old babies, can indicate that there might be something atypical going on. No baby should be so unhappy for such long stretches of time. For children who seem to be just sort of lying around like overcooked spaghetti, and they sleep too long, that's not what we want our kids to be doing either. We want them to be alert and curious about their environment from a very, very early age, from a few weeks old. We want these babies to be connecting, turning towards faces and voices. And I want new mothers to notice this, because there will always be those who say, they're there, don't worry. I want to empower the new uncertain mother, because her gut is telling her there's something wrong, and she's right. So we have to just, pay attention to what our little ones are telling us.
If a parent suspects their child has SPD, who should they see for an accurate assessment and diagnosis?
Try to figure out what the triggers are that have caused meltdowns in kids, and talk to a lot of people. The first person to talk to is a pediatrician, and unfortunately, pediatricians don't know about sensory processing, and some even dismiss it and say, oh, that's not important. All children hate seams in their socks. All children hate chunks in their peanut butter. All children have difficulties riding in the car over speed bumps. But if the parent has that uncomfortable feeling in her stomach, I want her to acknowledge that that is who she should listen to more than the doctor.
What is the recommended treatment for young children with SPD?
The best treatment for a child with SPD is occupational therapy using a sensory integration approach. It's called OTSI. Another excellent therapy is physical therapy using a sensory integration approach, PTSI. And so that means that the physical therapist has learned about sensory integration and knows how to incorporate some of the techniques into what she does with a child. Speech and language therapists who use sensory integration techniques get great mileage out of using these techniques. For instance, if they have a 30-minute session with a child and what they want to concentrate on is the child's speech articulation, if they take 10 of those 30 minutes and have the child bounce on a therapy ball, which is a great big sturdy ball that the child can jiggle on, that child will benefit from that sensory input, and the remaining 20 minutes of the 30-minute period will be very effective. Movement is calming and organizing. An occupational therapist will often design what's called a sensory diet for the individual child. In this sensory diet, there are alerting, organizing, and calming activities. And this can be different for each kid. So the occupational therapist finds what works for that kid, and then the teacher can do some of those activities, and the parent can do some activities. So the sensory diet is not just twice a week at the therapist's clinic, but also at home.
In your opinion, what are some effective ways a parent can help their child at home?
At home, parents can begin to figure out what is good for their child. And I want them not only to take note of what sends their child into a meltdown, but also at the end of a day, think, what were the good points today? What went really well? And chances are it's going to be right after the child got some physical input, the parent should see calm, organized behavior.
Is there a spectrum for sensory processing disorder?
There is a spectrum to SPD. For some people, it's very mild. So when we're talking about a spectrum, we can look at kids who seem to have signs of some sensory issues, which would be avoiding sensory experiences or atypically craving sensory experiences. And we might find that just by getting them doing more physical activity, we're not going to look at them that way anymore as being on the spectrum. And then there are kids who most definitely have SPD. And these are the children who are totally misunderstood. They might be suspected to have having autism, where they do not. They might be suspected of being the most challenging, manipulative, outrageously difficult children. They won't come to the table to have dinner. They won't get dressed in the morning. And there's a long, long list of how these children are not behaving appropriately. And we have to stop and look at these kids and look at their behavior and also understand that a child who's inclined to having sensory issues might have a very good day where his sensory problems are minimal. And then tomorrow he might have a very difficult day where the issues are tying him up in knots.
Is it true that a lack of school-based diagnostic resources, combined with the fact that SPD often looks like other disorders, frequently results in misdiagnoses and inappropriate treatment?
Sensory processing disorder has been around since time began. Jean Ayers, the occupational therapist who formulated the theory of sensory integration and sensory processing, did her work in the 60s and the 70s. So it's been slow for pediatricians and other pediatric specialists to learn about sensory processing. It's new to learn about, even though it's an old problem. Therefore, a child's behavior may be misdiagnosed and often is. And the look-alike is ADHD. For instance, supposing a child is at school and he's squirming in his seat and he's wriggling and wriggling and wriggling. Well, he looks inattentive and fidgety. And this hyperactivity and inattention are the big things to look at when you're seeing ADHD. But our little friend who's fidgeting and wriggling is doing that because the chair is not stable on the floor. And his vestibular system is saying, wait a minute, you are not grounded. The tag in his T-shirt and the seams in his socks are making him crazy. So he's squirming because his clothes are killing him. You know, teachers don't know vestibular proprioceptive, the ins and outs of the tactile system. The teacher, God bless her, sees this kid who's disruptive and not paying attention and might say something to the parent, and the parent notices the same fidgetiness and doesn't know why, and so the pediatrician, who didn't study SPD in medical school, he says, oh, maybe it's ADHD. Another common misdiagnosis is that the child has a psychological problem, because by the time the child is three, certainly by kindergarten age, there are psychological issues that begin to balloon if the child has SPD. Look at this child who cries when the teacher brings out the finger paint. And other kids begin to look at this crier as, oh, he's a baby. And they begin to not want to play with him. So this overriding sensory stuff is keeping the child from participating with others. Therefore, he has very low self-esteem. This starts cementing in the kid's brain when he's about three. So project that child further into elementary school, and the psychological baggage begins to get bigger. And I would say before you go to the talking therapist, take the child to a moving therapist, the occupational therapist who uses sensory integration techniques. That therapist is the one who's going to get this child moving. That's going to make him better equipped to be a friend and be a student and be an eater and a speaker and a trier of new things.
Thank you, Carol. To hear more interviews and stories like this, as well as information about issues affecting our children, please go to first5kids.org to find our Ask the Experts and Hot Topics podcasts. The site also contains local, state, and national information about children prenatal through age 5. Also, be sure to tune in to our in-depth family-focused podcast. Again, the website is first5kids.org. To learn more about Carol Kranowitz and her work, go to outofsyncchild.com. And to obtain further information on SPD, visit spdfoundation.net.